Becker on Darren Donick and Chase. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here live at Bridgestone Arena as the Predators have hit the ice. Looks like warm-ups in preparation for a game. Fang Vision, the big brand-new Jumbotron is up and running. Beautiful picture in HD as we sit here in Bridgestone Arena. Predators, of course, will have game one of their qualifying round against the Coyotes in Edmonton on Sunday, August the 2nd. That puck drop will be at 1 in the afternoon, and you can hear everything right here on 102.5 The Game. Let's talk a little football with the professor. John Clayton is on the line with us. You can follow him on Twitter at JohnClaytonNFL. He does radio in Seattle, 710 ESPN, as he now joins us on ESPN 102.5 The Game. John, how you doing?
Doing well. Hope you guys are doing well.
Well, we can't complain, and we're sitting here. Yes, it's just a practice, but we're actually seeing live sports. We're seeing professional athletes on a playing surface and conducting sporting activity. So for the last 4 months, it's a welcome.
I agree 100%. And, of course, now we've got training camp coming up on Tuesday and players reporting all through the league and deals getting done. So it's getting better despite all the craziness with the virus.
Does it look like we are going to get the news that preseason is not going to happen this year? Is that a done deal? Do you think there's not going to be any preseason games?
Yeah, it's pretty much a done deal. There's still some things that they're working on, you know, because what they're trying to do is get that ramp up period. The players want it a little bit longer because right now, you know, it's going to be, you know, 21 days of conditioning and trying to just get in shape, and then finally on about August the 16th is the first padded practice, but they want to push it back a couple more days to a little bit later in August as far as the padded practices. So they're still working on that. But to do it that way, you really can't have any real preseason games. And the reason is that, you know, look at what's going on with the testing. I mean, first off, the protocol is you come in and report, you take your test. Then you go and you're quarantined for 2 days, you know, doing Zoom meetings. And then after that, you have to back the fourth day and then to get a test. And then if you pass that after about a day or so, then you could start going into the facility. But think about the players that come in on the 28th. You know, that means that it's going to be 6 days, and that's going to go into August. And if you start doing a preseason, then you don't have the ability to get the guys on the field with 21 days to kind of get their bodies in shape. So I think the Players Association did a good job of campaigning for that. And I think in the end, you know, owners might have been disappointed, but I think they were willing to do it anyways.
I know, John, we need to see it play out and see how it really affects the start of the regular season. If there's a big difference, if there's a real rust factor with not having preseason games, I'd know probably more to properly answer this, but do you think no preseason this year will probably push this toward a trend of at least something less than four moving forward, in your opinion?
Yeah, because what's going to happen next year with the lost revenue, and it's going to be about $40 million of cap room that they're not going to, I don't think they're going to take it off the next year's cap, but they'll have to space it out maybe over 4 or 5 years. Owners want to, is that, you know, you can, you know, the cap right now is at 47%, but if you do the 17 games, which of course that could be in the cards for next year, then that takes the cap percentage up to 48.5. So you can make up like about, oh, $8 to $10 million of difference, plus you get more money for the extra games because you probably get about $500 million there. So you put that all together, and you can see that it'll probably be at the most two preseason games and maybe none, but I think they probably want to set it up so there'd be two. But I think this is the last year where there was going to be scheduled four, but I think it's going to be two for there on.
The NBA has their bubble down in Orlando. The NHL has two bubbles, one in Edmonton and one in Toronto. They're calling them hub cities, but they're basically their version of the bubble. And so far, John, through their protocols and their testing, the NBA and the NHL has come out very good. In fact, very surprising how many players and personnel that they have tested and how very, very little people have tested positive. So it's a really good sign for their return to play. How do you think this is going to work on the NFL side? Do you think it's going to be that easy and clean or tougher?
It's going to be a little tougher because you have so many more players, and you know, you're not having a bubble. I mean, really, the bubble is going to be in the team facility, and then the team hotel, which, of course, you can put as many players over there, I guess, as you need to. But, of course, you have other players who have families and they're going to go home. I mean, it's going to put this more on the players to try to make sure that they're not out partying, they're not out doing things that could bring the virus in the facility or to their families. And so I think you can see with the way the bubble concept was in the NBA, I mean, they couldn't even go outside the bubble. I mean, they were trapped in there and, you know, just trying to make the best out of that situation down in Orlando. And hockey's done a great job. Baseball's done a great job. Because when you think about that, at least, you know, the players had the opportunity to go home. And what they tested last week, 10,000 tests, and there was only 5 or 6 positives. That's pretty good. And you would anticipate if the players cooperate and behave, it could have very similar numbers by the time they get to September.
Since we're here at the arena and since the Predators are out on the ice getting ready for their return to play, I just want to ask you, step away from football for just a second, because you're in, you've got deep roots in Seattle and you're in the Seattle market. They're going to have an NHL franchise in a couple of years. What is the talk up there? Are people excited because of how Vegas came into the league and made noise right away? What's been the pulse right now to this point of Seattle getting an NHL franchise?
Well, if you remember when Vegas got their team, you know, they put the season ticket deposits up, and it took like about, 2 days for that to happen? It took maybe two and a half days for them to sell out all their demands. Well, I remember the day that they opened it up here in Seattle, I was on the show at 10 o'clock, and by 10:09 West Coast time, they not only had every deposit down and filled, but they had like 10 to 13,000 more. So I think they're very excited about it. And you can see, I mean, people are anxious to find out what the name of the team's going to be. You know, you got Ron Francis as the general manager. It's got a good organization. They're getting the arena fixed up so that they can go ahead and play. But no, I think that there's a genuine excitement because what was lost in this area was an NBA team, the Sonics, that was very popular. And so that's been missing. And so other than, say, college sports, you really didn't have that winter sport that you can have, and having hockey is going to be a big thing, and I think it's going to be a big success here.
John, I'm hearing it. I guess pretty soon you're going to hear what the nickname is and the logo and things like that. That's coming down the pike here very shortly, right?
Yeah, I think that they were thinking sometime in the fall. They were thinking a little earlier, maybe doing it in the summertime, but obviously with the virus and the pandemic, they figured it's not the best time to do it. So sometime in the fall, they're going to announce the name. And, of course, the advantage that both Vegas and this hockey team has is the fact that it's going to be a similar draft to what Vegas had, in the sense that you can get some good players. It's not like a normal expansion team where you have basically nothing and you're hoping to build it up through the draft. I mean, there's going to be more good players available, just like it was in Vegas.
John, the summer-long question that we've been following is what's going to happen with Jadeveon Clowney now that the Titans have certainty with the Derrick Henry contract. Give us your perspective, especially knowing where the Seahawks are coming from. Is there any chance that he goes back to Seattle, or is that a closed book at this time?
No, I mean, I think right now it's down to two teams. And the big question is going to be when, and I'll get into the when in a second, but it's Seattle and Tennessee. You know, he was talking to Cleveland initially, and this is where he made the mistake. You know, he was asking for 22-plus, and Cleveland was willing to go into 17s at the beginning of free agency, and then he wouldn't come off the 22, and so then he comes off the 22 down to 17, but that's when you couldn't do any physicals. And for a guy that started his NFL career with a microfracture, he had, you know, the core surgery last year, I mean, you've got to have a physical. You've heard that from John Robinson now for the last 2 months, is that, yeah, we'd like to have him have a physical. I mean, you know they want to have him. But, you know, and Seattle, he liked a lot. But and they offered the different times, starting at about $13 or $14 million, up to $16 million. He just didn't counter and didn't take it. And so you can see that, you know, my big question for Tennessee, and maybe you can answer it, would they be willing to give him a little bit more than Vic Beasley, who made 1 year $9.5 million? Because whatever deal Clowney's going to do, he's going to do a one-year deal now because he wants to hit the market and try to get back over 22. And he's really one of the top 6 or 7 edge rushers in football. What prevented him from getting the big money was the fact that he's not a big sack guy. He's never had double-digit sacks.
Yeah, and believe me, we have gone backwards and forwards on this. I think there's a huge sentiment from the fans and that they would love to see them do it. The Vic Beasley one is an interesting one because I think people's expectations are sort of tempered with Beasley. They don't see him as the full solution. It's almost been an assumption that they want to have Clowney. But as you get closer to the training camp, this is the time. But I think we're all wondering now that Derrick Henry has signed and you know exactly what you've got, and they it appears that they position themselves to have a little bit more available now because they got rid of that franchise tag and they spread the money out a little bit more, that they have more to offer Clowney if they need to.
But here's going to be the big question, and I go into the when, because Clowney still believes he's a $22 million player, and so knowing he's going to do a one-year deal, is he willing to risk injury and risk maybe getting the virus by coming into training camp? Because if you saw the comments that he made or heard the comments that he made to Josina Anderson about a week or so ago, he said that I'd like to get something done before the start of the season. And that's, I think, a key word there, because would he be willing to hold out like he did last year until late August and then come in August 31st and then take what the best deal there, whether it's from Tennessee or Seattle? And that's what I kind of wonder about, knowing him and really respecting him, because, I mean, this is a guy that went out there in right at Thanksgiving. He went into Philadelphia where they played the Philadelphia Eagle game and got his test on his core injury, and they told him to have surgery then. He held off on the surgery and finished the season. I mean, he missed some games, obviously, but he did an incredible job as far as just being able to fight through the pain in that. And so what I wonder is that is he willing to come into camp knowing he's going to be playing for less than half of what he's asking for?
Wow. Here's my follow-up question, John, is if it's the Titans or the Seahawks, what is plan B for each of those teams if they don't get Clowney? For example, if the Titans get Clowney, what will the Seahawks do to try to fill his gap, if anything?
Well, both are in a position that, what you look at, it's a bonus if you get him, because, you know they have three outside linebackers. I mean, you have Landry, you got Beasley, and you got Korea. And so, and he's going to be there as a linebacker. So now you have four linebackers, and he's just a luxury to have. In the case of Seattle, they'd love to have him because, again, that strengthens them and puts them even closer to being equal to the 49ers or above. But they've had four additions at the defensive end position. They got Bruce Irvin. They were able to get Benson Mayoa. And that Irvin has 52 career sacks. Benson has 20 career sacks. And then last year they combined for 15 and a half on their two teams. Their second-round pick is Daryl Taylor, who they think can be pretty good, and then they got Alton Robinson in a later round. So they got four additions on the defensive line, but if they don't get Clowney, then they may go for Everson Griffin, they may look Vinny Curry, or they may just wait and wait and wait until sometime a little bit later to see if they want to add anything.
John, we talked about preseason games as we wrap this up and no preseason games. What about fans in the stands? Do you think we are trending toward nobody in these stadiums this fall?
I'm thinking so, yeah. Because when you look at it, I mean, we already know that the two New York teams have had the rule that they're not going to have any fans in the stands. Philadelphia is still very shaky. They came out and they said, hey, no fans in the stands this year. And so I think it's going to be tough, and particularly with the spike that we have, in the first round here with the pandemic. Because, I mean, right now you still have to wonder a little bit if California – and Texas go back to phase one, if that's the case and put a stay-at-home order, then are they even going to be able to practice there? So I think right now the odds are no fans in the stands.
To me, that's a shame. And I know, I understand, but there are three franchises that it absolutely robs. It robs your market because everybody knows that's an incredible atmosphere for home games in Seattle. It robs Kansas City at Arrowhead because they're coming off winning the Super Bowl, if indeed they go no fans. And it robs Tampa with all their big moves in the offseason for a team that has struggled selling out games. I don't think they would have had any problems selling out every home game this year. But if there's nobody in the stands, obviously that would hurt them too. So, but I agree with you. I think that's probably where we're going, unfortunately.
Yep, that looks like the way it's trending, unfortunately. But, hey, the big thing is let's have training camp, let's have football.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, thanks for the visit. As always, continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road, John.
Okay, thanks.
All right, John Clayton, at John Clayton NFL on Twitter. Give him a follow. He is a good follow. He's got over a million followers, and we do appreciate him joining us. Of course, he's a host on 710 ESPN.
That was good
there,
stuff.
Out in Seattle. No doubt about it. We will come back and wrap up this second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.